So you've been doing work?
Springboks has won, whether it's by 2 points, but we have won Mashabane. So it was a good weekend. And it's a pity that the Sharks boy has missed the first kick of his life in a Springbok jersey, but he played a good game. So that will ease and settle your mind for the meeting.
My
name is Freddie Adams. I'm a permanent delegate of the Western Cape and chairperson of Economic Development. It's in the NCOP we are clustered. We've got Economic Development. We oversee three departments: Economic Development, Energy, and Mineral Resources. So if you see Economic Development, don't be alarmed if you hear about Energy also in there. Because as I've explained in the National Council, we are clustered. Welcome, Honorable Kamere, also all the way from KwaZulu-Natal, Kandla, in Glovo in Kandla. Welcome. I'm a permanent delegate of the Western Cape. Today, we honorable members and the department, we've got a couple of things on the program, and let me start off by first apologizing to the DG and the staff of the department. You were here at 9:30. The letter that you have received from our secretary stated 9:30, but we've got another secretary for the committee. The other secretary is on sick leave. She has just undergone an operation, and the standing secretary didn't know that the letters was out for 9:30, and the meeting has been then scheduled for 10. So we really want to apologize for getting out of bed so early, specifically on this cold day in Cape Town. But please accept our apology. Then, members, we've got three items on the agenda. We'll see how time gets us. Also, we scheduled the meeting for up until 5 o'clock today. But unfortunately, we have to cut at 1 o'clock because there is an NCOP plenary. And we didn't get permission to carry on with our meeting because of the plenary that there is, DG. So also our apologies for that. But you can then go back to Pretoria earlier and do some work in the office, because out of office sometimes the work piles up. But we will have to, members, see how fast we can go. With our program, I think if needs be, then we'll have to skip one item, and that will be then the briefing by the department on the solar, on the rollout of the solar heaters. But it is in your pack. Every member has received a pack from the department like this. It is in your pack. We will then have to skip that one if it needs to. Is that in order? Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, members, we've got then the annual report. And like I said, on point number three, we'll see how time allows us. But for point number four, it's also very important that we, before Parliament rises, that we that we do the statute of the IAEA before Parliament rises. Otherwise, the statute will lapse, and then it will have to be reinvented, and then South Africa won't be a signatory to this body. But the department will explain that to us as we go along. Let me start on my right-hand side with the introductions, and let me start with the mother of Mr. Malema.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chairperson. From Limpopo Province.
Now, please, KZN.
Good morning, Elsa van Lingen from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, Bev Abrams from Gauteng.
Morning, Kamonya from Mpumalanga.
Morning, St. Clair, Morgan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and then to Mokwani, Steve, if anything. Morning, Chairperson. I'm Londa Zandebezi from the Department of Energy.
My name is Mombi Apali from the Department of Energy, Electricity, Nuclear, and Clean Energy, acting the DDG.
Good morning. Dakaro Nikiba Raulu, acting Chief Financial Officer.
Morning, my name is Bitebo Hokomo and I'm the Chief Director for Nuclear Energy.
My name is George Mgoni. I'm the DG for Corporate Services.
Chairperson, honorable members, good morning. Tsidiso Makubela, my name. I'm the DDG responsible for hydrocarbons and energy planning.
Good morning, Archer William T. Committee Secretary.
Yeah, now we can put the names to the faces, or the faces to the names, so that we don't hear tomorrow or read tomorrow a press statement out tomorrow. A reliable or an informed source or has said this and that and that. We can now clearly say that. Are you family of Trollope or Fagir?
We all the family Trollope's in our country.
Oh, okay. I didn't say that bad. I was just asking this family because I wanted to say be careful now, members of the DA, that we might report you to his family member in over a bribe or something. But members and staff of the department, let me immediately hand over to the DDG instead of wasting time and to take us through the annual report and take us further through the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The team already has introduced themselves. And our acting CFO, is going to give us a presentation on the annual report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, honorable members. We are going to do our annual report presentation, firstly looking at the key deliverable objectives
question through you is the presentation you are referring to is the very last one in the pack. In the pack, we've got three presentations. We've got the solar water heating at the front, and the IEA Institute, and then the annual report. That is the very last presentation.
Thank you, DG. I need to bring to the attention of the committee that this report, of course, it is still the Department of Minerals and Energy report. So there are some programs that belong to the Department of Mineral Resources. For the purposes of this meeting, we won't dwell much on them, of course. We'll concentrate particularly on energy-related matters. And we'll then proceed to our to the outcomes of the 2009 and 10 annual financial statement and the report there. Of course, Chairperson, on the background, we are talking more about what happened last year when this department was established, which I'm sure most of the committee members and the departmental officials are now familiar with. And as it is now, on the current financial year, we are operating as the Department of Energy. But however, during the split last year, we had to embark on going back to a strategic planning session that was meant to creating a forecast Department of Energy dealing with energy matters, after which then we operated functionally, in terms of the line function as a Department of Energy, of course supported by a joint support service function that was supporting both the DMR and the DOE. The challenges that faced the implementation of this strategic plan, of course, was what we have been doing, particularly to try and make sure that by the beginning of April 2010, the two departments were running as independent departments. Those were that was one of the key challenges that resulted in a lot of resource constraints. You remember that immediately with the introduction of the split of the departments, there was an instruction that we cannot involve consultants to do that. We must use our own resources to be able to establish the two departments. So there was a real big stretch in terms of the human resources and the financial resources in that regard. Our aging electricity generation is again a problem. The maintenance part of our electricity is not really up to scratch. And as a result, at some areas, you might find that we're having problems with the connection or sustaining the connected houses and so on. So sometimes the plans have to be realigned to ensure that they talk to the infrastructure. The liquid fuels infrastructure supply challenges as well. We were busy preparing for the hosting of the World Cup, which I'm sure all the committee members are now at ease that we have successfully done that without any shortages on both the electricity side and liquid fuels side. The global economic meltdown, of course, is something that is that has continuously challenged us in the past financial year. The introduction of our balanced scorecard methodology planning during the 2008, the department was still trying to get used to this process and how does it really work. So some of the things you might find that they were not really, particularly when it comes to the measurability and so on, you find sometimes the adoption of a new model have a role when we formulate the strategy. The alignment of the DG's performance agreement as prescribed by the DPSA as well was one of those challenges because it came mid-year, and as a result, this has to cascade to the operation. And then as a result, our BSC methodology adoption has been put on hold until we are comfortable that we have got the tools and mechanisms to be able to adopt it successfully. Coming to the vision, the mandate, mission and the vision, our mandate is to provide services, of course, for the effective transformation and governance of minerals and energy for the economic growth and development. This time around, it's more into energy. Energy is the backbone of all economic activities that we do. Either you're transporting something or you're producing, all the industry are heavily reliant on energy supply. Our mission is to regulate and promote this energy sector for the benefit of all. Our vision is a transformed and sustainable energy sector with universal access to modern energy carriers for all South Africans. Our key objectives are to promote, we've already dealt with that, that was just a summary. As the Department of Minerals and Energy Chairperson, we were having seven programs, of which the relevant one for today will be the program one, which is administration, which was shared by both. And then we'll go to program five, which is hydrocarbons and energy planning, and we'll go to electricity, nuclear, and clean energy. And again, we have got entities and transfer payments that we make on program seven, which is associated services. Given the background around the issue of our split process, wherein we were sharing the administration function, therefore, as a result, our support services was serving the two departments until the end of March 2009. Therefore, as I've already indicated, we will be focusing particularly our presentation on the two branches that are pertaining to electricity plus the associated services and the common program one, which was shared. Hydrocarbons and energy planning. This program is responsible for the policy and regulation to manage the petroleum, coal, and natural gas sector. We have got the petroleum controller there that administers the issuing of licenses and monitoring and enforcing compliance, particularly to the distribution side of the petroleum. And they were for energy planning, which deals with ensuring that our industry is sustainable and the use of our energy resources through the integrated energy planning is done. The implementation of the Petroleum Products Amendment Act, 15,198 license applications were received since the implementation, and 12,453 of those were processed, and we had the remaining 2,745 licenses, that some of them we have got queries on, some of them are already being processed, and then maybe we have got outstanding information that we need to be able to finalize them. Inspectors from compliance and monitoring units undertook 2,309 site inspections for the year under review in order to ensure that we monitor the compliance by the licensed sites. And in actual fact, to ensure that all the operators are operating, being licensed. The import and export of fuel products, 1,200 import and export permits were issued during the period under review. As we all know, South Africa is one of those major exporters of petrol and diesel to the neighboring countries, and these export permits are critical. Safe illuminating paraffin or IP pilot project. 1,000 IP safe stoves were distributed by the department to the households in Gauteng. There were 350, Western Cape 350, KwaZulu-Natal 150, and Eastern Cape 150 stoves to be able to ensure that we diversify the use of energy resources at our households and trying to again teach the safety use. Promote the safety, the safer use of these appliances. The project, of course, has resulted in prevention of fires, the higher cost of stones will remain a challenge because that particular project was targeted to the neediest of the South Africans, and as a result, the affordability of those stones is still something that we are not really very happy with. On our national integrated energy modeling system, the user requirement specification of that has been developed on the year under review. Of course, we are very well advanced now in the current financial year. Due to the funding constraints, of course, alternative approaches of these modeling systems were evaluated and certain recommendations were made in order to ensure that what we intend to do is what we can afford. And then the draft integrated energy planning strategy was completed during the year under review. The energy digest was finalized in December 2009. The energy price report was compiled and finalized. The energy branch, the energy balance for 2006 was finalized and published on the department's website. Those publications are available and are accessible at the department. The FIFA World Cup task team, as I've already indicated in the beginning on the background of the presentation, we have set up a task team to ensure that there is adequate supply of jet fuel and other petroleum products during the World Cup 2010, which was successfully done. The operational plans were developed in conjunction with the oil industry and Transnet to be able to address those problems. The team worked very hard and tirelessly during the period, and the objectives of the day for the particular team were met. On the LPG side, the draft regulation and the associated working rules were published in the Government Gazette for the public comment in November 2009. The regulatory accounts, which is the one aspect in the regulatory accounts projects, the benchmark service station model was completed and discussed with relevant stakeholders, and the project is being dealt with in detail on the current financial year. Funding mechanism of the multi-product pipeline, which is done in conjunction with the Transnet, was done at a quality of supply level of 7.5% per litre, was determined by the Minister of Finance to contribute towards the construction of this NMPP, and as it is now, the process or the project is work in progress. There is work happening on the ground on that front. The performance on the cleaner fuel side, a draft position paper and the roadmap was developed, having engaged with the two stakeholders, namely the SAPIA and the NAMSA. The department also engaged SAPIA on their proposal on clean fuels on the year under review. The Integrated Energy Center, which is the initiative of the Department of Energy to be able to get petrol stations or energy supply centers throughout the country. Three IECs, namely in Ulundi and in KwaZulu-Natal, Tunu in Bizana in Eastern Cape. Tunu and Bizana, both are in Eastern Cape, were at the advanced stages in the environmental impact assessment, and there is a good progress on the current financial year that is happening. A salt training ceremony at Tunu IEC was done in February 2010, and the establishment and registration of Mizana and Tunu cooperatives with the Department of Trade and Industry in the Eastern Cape was completed during the year. Two energy needs assessment surveys were done in Western Cape and Limpopo, and information sessions on energy safety and energy education were organized in seven provinces: Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KZN, Northwest, Mpumalanga, Gauteng, and Limpopo. We are very passionate about that process, and there is a lot of activities that are happening here. Going to program six, which is our electricity, nuclear, and clean energy, we have got four subdivisions. We've got the electricity part, we've got where the integrated national electrification program is dealt with, we've got the nuclear sector, and then we've got the clean energy. Of course, we do provide the regulatory framework for the electricity sector, as per our mandate, and we ensure the energy of security and universal access and the diversification of the primary energy sources and promotion of clean and efficient technologies. The overall management of the electrification program, which is INEP, the planning part of it is critical in order to achieve the universal access that we have been tasked to achieve. On our nuclear sector, we are striving and working very hard to improve the governance of that nuclear sector. The clean energy side facilitates the implementation of renewable energy and energy efficiency within the country. The key policy developments that we have had under the program during the year under review, Chairperson, were the review of the 2003 Renewable Energy White Paper and the 17th Constitutional Amendment, the second amendment of the Electricity Regulation Act, the development of the country's first IRP, which was IRP1, and the development of the New Generation Capacity Regulation, the development of standard offer policy on energy efficiency and demand-side management, which is mainly related by many to the solar initiatives, water solar heaters, the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute Act 53 of 2008 was promulgated during the past financial year. On the electricity side, the IRP1 was gazetted, the New Generation Capacity Regulations were promulgated, 17 constitutional amendment was released from DOE to lead department, DOG, for cabinet consideration. And the standard offer policy as well was completed and gazetted. The INEP, the targeted household connections were 150,000 for the previous financial year, of which we have exceeded the expectation of the target to 167, which means we have overperformed by 17,190 connections. The solar water heating, the project implementation plans were developed. The joint implementation process with municipalities, CEF, which is our public entity, and the ESCOM were concluded in the previous financial year as well. The nuclear energy, the research and development agreement signed with the USA, and then we are anticipating to do more this year, or we are already doing more this year. The development of the business case to lead the entity is underway, as well as the appointment of the board of directors. The renewable energy, we had a successful renewable energy summit to review the renewable energy policy during the year under review, and the revised white paper of which will be finalized during the current financial year. Chairperson, the allocation on the integrated national electrification program were as follows in terms of the municipal allocation. As you know, the program is implemented in four ways, or we have subdivided it into four. There is an allocation that we give to municipalities. That was for the current year under review was 982 million, which we have utilized 940 million, and 18 million of that was not utilized. As a result, there is a variance of 3.6% in terms of the budget that was not utilized. The ESCOM allocation part of it was 1.4 billion, which we have utilized the whole of it, and the ESCOM special schools allocation was 148 million, which was successfully utilized during the year under review. The non-grid allocation to appointed service providers as well, we had 84 million, and then 98% of that was dispersed. Was not dispersed, apologies. As a result, that is one of those processes that we'll be dealing with when we go down to the presentation. Those are the performances in terms of the INEP per province. You will see they are talking to the consolidated amount. So this is ESCOM plus must be based on the municipality's part of it, wherein per province we indicate how much was allocated and how much was then spent. So that shows the variance in total of around about 2%. The overall understanding on INEP, of course, is not desirable, but we have managed to perform within the norm that has been set, which is 5%. Given the undesirability of it, it's one of the areas that we are working very hard on it on the current financial year to ensure that we can spend close to the total at the end of the financial year. That understanding, Chairperson, can mainly be attributed to the this 3-month gap between the financial years of municipalities and the national department. By the time we are receiving our allocation, the municipalities are trying to finalize their financial year, and they are not keen at all to start implementing new projects on the first 3 months of the year of national departments, which is starting 1 April while theirs is ending at the end of June. So as a result, the municipality tendering and administration process will usually start or kickstart in their new financial year, which would be in July. By that particular point, a quarter on the national department's year is already gone. So this takes a bit long for the municipalities then to start now requesting the money that we have in terms of Division of Revenue Act. You'll remember that we have got quite a number of requirements that we have to comply with before we do that. And as a result, municipalities usually, they start getting this money around about August, September, when they are picking up, where the projects are now picking up the momentum. Those are the reasons for variances, particularly per province. You've seen our Limpopo, Musina, Elias Mutsoaledi, and Mokopong were greatly affected. Some of the situations are related to the capacity within the municipality, which brings the performance on the program down to its knees, and the unavailability of the network to electrify the targeted houses. I've talked to the bigger or bulk infrastructure in the beginning as one of the challenges in this particular program. And on Gauteng province, the Nogeng Taimani, the municipality was intending to refurbish the old network with INEP funding areas, and as a result, the backlog is not actually in terms of our targets, but the bigger challenge is on the refurbishment of the old network so that we can be able to sustain the current supply in that on that particular area. The Northwest province, we have underspent by 6.1 million. The municipality was still busy. By 2009 and 10 financial year, with the 2008 and 9 projects, and as a result, we could not complete both two financial years projects. They had to finalize the 2008 and 9, and they started with the 2009 and 10. The illegal occupation of houses is again one of our problems. You remember that our planning is in line with the built project. As and when the houses are being built, we build our connection targets towards that. And when these houses are not allocated or occupied well in time, it's difficult for us as well to go and do the electrification. So once those problems come into play on the other side, on our sister department, they affect us as well in terms of our targets. In Mansumpa, 468,000 was not utilized. There was no readily implementable projects at the area. Chairperson, I will continue to the analysis of the financial performance of the department for the 2010 financial year. That was just the summary in terms of the performance in line with, of course, the annual report that we have presented. President, we have started with the technical analysis of the performance in terms of both all the three financial statements, which is our balance sheet, the income statement, and the cash flows, and just the indication on the net assets. In terms of our statement of financial performance, Chairperson, we had budgeted 259 million for compensation of employees, and we have had a variance there of 51 million. And then, in terms of our periodic payments, which related mainly to our sister branch, which is in mineral resources, particularly around the marking of health inspection exams that they conduct. The pension, as well, you see that it's in line with the performance on the basic salaries, wherein we have underspent by around 25%. The goods and services part, we have subdivided it into the major cost drivers, which is particularly our venues and facilities. You will see there that after our environment, of course, we have balanced that in terms of our environment process, but what we have budgeted for, we have almost doubled that. You will remember that by the time the two ministries were established, the budget was sitting at one department a basis, and as a result, when these two departments start to separate, these activities were now doubling basically. In terms of our advertising, as well, we had budgeted a very little, and we spent quite a lot. There was a lot of appointments that we have to do in terms of the previous financial year to try and align these things. And again, one other thing, the publishing and the public consultations in terms of the work that we'll be doing in policy development and stuff has pushed that amount a bit. Our communication as well, we have put a lot of austerity measures in order to control that part of the of operations, not to run away, and we have just we had a saving there, you can see, of 15% after we have put those controls in place. We have budgeted 20 million and we have spent only 17. In terms of our traveling, Chairperson, this relates directly to the introduction of the new of the two ministries. We have also spent by basically 14%. The operational leases, Chairperson, we have underspent by 76%. This mainly relates to the Department of Public Works invoices that were unpaid during the end of the financial year, due to the fact that their authenticity and the verification of these figures from what we understand and what the other department understand were not done, but that problem has been dealt with in the current financial year. The financial transactions in assets and liabilities relates particularly with the issues of the bad debts that were written off. The tangible capital assets, Chairperson, you see that that amount exceeded by 577%. You remember that in the previous financial year, we were moving offices from our old headquarters to the new building. So that relates particularly to the assets that we procured for the move to the new offices. Of course, now moving, taking into consideration that we are going to be two departments on the other side. And that, of course, goes for the machinery and equipment that we bought. As a result, Chairperson, the last one, which is software and intangible, we had to reclassify some of this money to go and buy tangible capital assets, since we were having a dire need on that regard. And as a result, we had a 44% underspending on software and intangible assets. Chair, we have just done the summary of or the write-up to the figures that have just been presenting. The lot of things that have been written here is what has been indicating. As you can see, as I was indicating, that our staff had increased from the 1,272 to 1,272 from money to build into the 577% over expenditure that I was talking about in terms of the capital, in terms of the tangible assets, which are owing to the new building, of course. The statement of financial performance, Chairperson, the cash and cash equivalent has increased by 34%. Our prepayments and advances have decreased by 224%. Our receivables, Chairperson, as well, have increased by 104%. In terms of our current liabilities, our voltage funds have increased. You remember that this relates to the underspending, of course, that we have experienced in terms of the INEP or electrification program. And as a result, that results to money owed to the National Treasury that we have to surrender, or that we have surrendered during the current financial year. And the, of course, our net assets have increased by 21%. The write-up on the financial position, Chairperson, is as follows. Our base, of course, of assets has increased by 24% because of the big expenditure that we incurred as and when we're moving to the new building. The prepayments and advances that went down, Chairperson, is mainly related to the Department of Mineral Resources project on mining rehabilitation, of which on the previous financial years we had the money that was paid to MINTEC, which is one of their entities that was executing the project. And the projects were then executed during the 2009 and 10 financial year, and as a result, those prepayments were reduced by that significant amount. It was an amount of around about 19 million. The recoverable expenditure, Chairperson, of 7.6 million and fraud, the fraud case that was that happened, that hit the department some 2 or 3 years ago, that the police are still busy finalizing the case. You will remember, Chair, that this was a very big amount in the previous financial year. Of course, it was reduced when we recover the money that was lying with the banks that we have managed to trap in the process. And then there is a notable decrease, Chairperson, on the long outstanding staff debts. The staff debts, usually, Chairperson, are debts that relate particularly to our bursaries and the like, wherein we assist our staff members to be able to pay for them tuition fees and so on for further study. And as and when they default from the prescribed policies of the department, we recover back the money. Usually it's around when they don't continue and finish the studies or they somehow terminate the studies. The process is that if you fail this current financial year, on the next financial year, you carry the cost of your studies, and as and when you successfully do that, on the next financial year, then the department pays for you when you progress to the to complete the program. The total liability is Chairperson of 201 million, which is an increase. It's mainly around the payment of revenue. Usually, at the when we are joined with the Department of Mineral Resources, the mining royalties payments are usually done on the later end of the financial year. There are quite a number of mines that does that. I'm sure, particularly because our financial year coincides with their financial year. So they pay as and when at the end of their financial year. Sometimes they pay in the last 3 or so days of the financial year, and as a result, we don't get enough time to surrender that money within the same financial year. Usually we pay it on the coming financial year. The net assets of 3.2 million, Chairperson, include the capitalization reserve and the 1 million on recoverable revenue that was still there in around the mining rehabilitation process that I have indicated. In terms of our cash flow statement, our receipts, Chairperson, has increased by 17%. Our net cash flow from operating activities, 76%, and the net cash flow available from financing activities, Chairperson, have increased by 1.8%, and our cash and cash equivalent have increased by 34%. This directly, of course, relates to the same process that I was saying of the revenue that we have to surrender and the underspending money that we didn't spend during current financial year that we have to return to the National Treasury. So that is the write up on the cash flow statement that I was just indicating. The significant increase on the net cash flow, which happens on investing activities, is of course due to the acquisition of furniture and the IT infrastructure that we were trying to build for the new two departments. That this figure or this area is directly related to the 577% increase in expenditure that I have indicated on the statement of financial performance. Our analysis of variances, Chairperson, on disclosure notes, you will remember that because we are operating on the cash basis of accounting or modified cash basis of accounting, all our liabilities and our accrued expenses are not built in into our system. So we have got separate processes of accounting for those things that could have happened, but cash have not yet exchanged hands, and as a result, they don't appear in either of our financial statements. So our contingent liabilities, Chairperson, had increased by 25%. This mainly relates again to Department of Mineral Resources, particularly where they give guarantees to entities like Mine Health and Safety Council on projects that they do. And as a result, those become contingent. And our commitments had increased by 12%. Our accruals increased by 67%. That 67%, of course, is very high. It's related to the public works payment that was not made. The employee benefits is sitting at 28%. The lease commitment, it only increased by 2%. And the receivable for departmental revenue, it has increased by 59%. Our irregular expenditure, Chairperson, of around about 4 million, that we'll deal with us and when we go to our audit report. In the previous financial year, we had none, and we had around about 4 million on the current financial year. The related purchase transactions, those are usually payments that we make to our entities for some other services, and at some point in time we pay some of the board of directors at some of these boards of our entities, and that has decreased significantly to 232 million. I mean to 232%. This again relates to the issues around the mining rehabilitation process as well, because you remember MINTEC is a government entity, so it's regarded as a related entity when you transfer money to them, particularly if it's not in line with DORA, which is the case in terms of the mining rehabilitation project. Our key management personnel expense have increased by 26%. This, of course, is the payment that relates to the senior management of an organization. So this directly relates now to the two ministries that we had during the year under review. Of course, their provisions as well relate directly to that. The provisions are mainly related to issues around the leave payment, the pro rata bonuses. They will accumulate, of course, with the period that you are serving on the current financial year. Hence, they are sitting on the same percentage, which is 26% increase. This is the write-up again on the disclosure notes. I think it's much more. I'm trying to talk to a figure and talk to the what are the possible causes, so that at least we are able then to relate the figure and the story behind it. But this is the write-up in terms of the disclosure notes. I've indicated the contingent liabilities, the issues around the guarantees that I was talking to, some of the legal claims that are particularly mainly on the mineral resources side, particularly in line with this issue of land claims, wherein there are a license granted and there is a contestation of who is the owner of the land. The accruals increase of 67%, I've indicated, is the public works invoice, which we were still awaiting for by the year end. And the increase in employee benefits, of course, were as a result of the leave payments and performance bonuses that are due, the pro rata ones that I've been talking about. And the receivable increase as a result of monies due to the department, the late payment of the royalties, and the irregular expenditure incurred in the current financial year was mainly related to employees that haven't followed the internal financial delegations. In the past, Chairperson, the process the understanding in terms of the rules and the guidelines was that an amount is deemed irregular if the department transgressed or didn't comply with an applicable law or a regulation. But in the current financial year, the Auditor General have decided that even if it's a non-compliance with an internal process, it might still be within the law, but if it is a transgression of an internal process or a procedure, they regard that as irregular. And as a result, you see that that change in the treatment has resulted in that deemed 4 million irregular expenditure. In terms of now the transfers and subsidies, Chairperson, to our entities, I will particularly concentrate on the energy-related ones. You can go to the next slide. Those are mainly mineral resources sites. Our South African National Energy Corporation, we have transferred to them. We had budgeted 564 million and transferred the whole of it to them. Our National Nuclear Regulator, we have budgeted 23 million and it was all transferred by the year end. And our Electricity Distribution Industry Holdings, Chairperson, had a budget of 72 million and we have transferred the whole of it during the year. Our ESCOM program, we have indicated that on electrification, we have budgeted 1.6 billion, which we transferred. And the Industrial Development Corporation relates particularly to the Department of Mineral Resources. Coming to our audit report, Chairperson, we have obtained after a long period of getting unqualified audit reports. We obtained a qualified audit opinion this year, and the basis of qualification, Chairperson, was particularly related to the payments of royalties by mines, or the system we run to have to operate that process. The auditor felt that or expressed an opinion that if we don't have a system in place, we cannot guarantee to say whether a system in the sense of a computer system, not the system in the sense of a web, but a computer system or a database, we cannot with certainty tell them that that figure that which we are disclosing on the financial statement is the actual figure that is supposed to be disclosed. Although, Chairperson, this does not really conform with the base of accounting of which we are operating on, which is modified cash basis, that links to the accrual system of accounting which we are not on, and as a result, is not supported by the systems that we have. So we have to run an extra spreadsheet, an extra database to be able to manage that particular process. And the root cause of that, Chairperson, is what I was indicating, giving the context of the basis of qualification, that there is no comprehensive data system. But one other thing that plays a role in this process is that at our regional offices, we don't have accounting skills. Our operations there as the DME, the regional managers are mainly on the operation. It's still almost the same with our current system at the energy, although we don't have such big administrative burden in terms of financial administration at the region. And as a result, Chairperson, that results in a lot of mistakes that are encountered in the process. The sister department is now developing their new data system to be able to supplement the bus system that we operate, and trying to build capacity at the regional offices in terms of financial training and getting additional financial staff to the region to be able to beef up the existing team. Chairperson, there other issues that the auditor have raised, which are important, although they are not qualifications, but in terms of the law, if there are issues, or in terms of their rules, if there are issues that they feel the users of the financial statements need to know and they are critical, they have to bring to the attention of the user. So those matters reported, Chairperson, are the basis of accounting, or the basis of reporting. This paragraph, Chairperson, is expressed on all government departments in South Africa. It's mainly relating to the setting of the accounting standards. So the responsible person in that regard is the Accountant General residing at the National Treasury, and as a result, there is no further action that we can take to be able to alleviate that in the next financial year. The issue of irregular expenditure, Chairperson, is one of those issues that were raised as well as an emphasis of matter. But as I've already indicated, that is expenditure in terms of regarding to the previous financial year were mainly or were related to internal delegation of authorities that were not complied with, e.g. These services are rendered prior to the approval of the relevant authority. Let's just say, for instance, we are now here in Cape Town and there is a critical need in Pretoria now, and one of maybe officials within my team acted within my limit. But as and when I arrive back to Pretoria, I need to be able to look at that and see if it was a valid instance or that was a necessary expenditure, and then be able to approve that. And therefore, those are not basically necessarily in contravention with the PFMA also, but are mainly related to our internal control system that we've put in place in order to ensure that there is a responsibility at a higher level in terms of incurring of these expenditures. So most of these issues we have tried to address, of course, with the internal control systems that we are setting on the establishment, or when we establish the current, our new departments. And all these cases that were reported last year, Chairperson, they were evaluated and deemed to be necessary and condoned by the accounting officer during that financial year. There was another issue, Chairperson, that is more of an for information, which is a restatement of previous financial year figures. This usually happens when the accounting systems or accounting policy change. Let's say, for instance, a typical one on asset revaluation, wherein you find that maybe in the previous financial year we used to disclose assets at cost and at a cost price, and on the current financial year the accounting policy changed to be able to disclose them on the market value. That, of course, have to be changed even on the financial year for comparability on our financial statements. The issue of material underspending on our budget, of course, Chairperson, I have indicated that this is a very undesirable situation, and we are very, very worried about that situation, even currently as the Department of Energy. This has resulted particularly from the INEP program that I was talking about. But in total, the underspending for our department was 2.9%, which was well below the norm. But when you look at what that money could have done, of course, it's a worrisome process. On the non-grid, I think I've already explained the issue around the municipality's financial years non-alignment. But on our non-grid project, our contracts were signed a bit late for the past financial year. And by the time they were finalized, our year was already gone. But fortunately, Chairperson, we requested for a rollover on those particular funds. As by the end of the financial year, we're deeming them as commitment. There were already contracts signed for the utilization of that money. So Treasury have subsequently granted us the approval for that rollover, and the projects are now currently being executed. Our audit committee, Chairperson, as a requirement by law as well, they have they have reported these issues that are critical to management, the potential unauthorized expenditure due to accruals exceeding the savings. Now, this is an academic or what? It's an implied over expenditure. So what they do is they say you have this much commitments at the end of the year, plus your expenditure is more than your budget. So as a result, technically, you have overspent. You have spent more than what your budget is. But of course, because of the accounting system that we are operating on, which is cash-based, that doesn't basically become an overspenditure on your financial statement. But if you were on accrual, they would have been deemed to be an overexpenditure. And the material amount there that relates to that is the public works invoice that we didn't have by the end of the financial year and which we could not then pay over to them. In terms of the functionality of our financial management systems, you will remember, Chairperson, that as and when this irregular expenditure or unauthorized expenditure or something is incurred within the system, our system will pick it up and then we'll follow the necessary steps. If the amount can be condoned, we condone those. And if such cannot be condoned, then disciplinary processes are instituted. We had four reported cases of financial misconduct last year. The outcomes of the hearing on the two were found guilty. One was still in progress, and one had already left the department. And further action taken, Chairperson, on the two cases were reported to the police, while the other one was suspended. As a verdict of the formal hearing, he was suspended for 3 months without pay, and the other, a fourth one, is still in progress. Our supply chain management issues. The National Treasury has requested or has imposed a framework that all the departments must comply with effect from the two previous financial years. By the previous financial year, ours was already fully operational, established in terms of the rules, and all the internal control measures as expected were put in place. And the department's internal control systems in place were able to pick up all these irregular expenditures and deal with them effectively. In conclusion, Chairperson, although a significant amount of effort was directed, of course, to this reorganization and implementation of the split of the department, we are comfortable to report that very minor deviations were made on the initial business plan, or very minor variance in terms of performance were experienced. And of course, as you can see us this current financial year, we are Department of Energy, so with effect from the 1st of April 2010, we started to operate as a standalone department with our budget, with our own human capital and premises and all those other required facilities for us to be able to operate, and we are operating almost comfortably now. I think we are now set up. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Acting CFO, honourable members. Before we go to the next presentation, let me recognize you in terms of questions, clarity. I want to engage the department on the annual report. No one. Oh, honourable Lisa, I thought we were lucky today. And skipping and honourable Nambi. Seems that's the only two. Honourable Gomere, Honourable Flamingan. Honourable Flamingan. Did I miss the hand here? Honourable Lees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the department for the submission. Mr. Chairman, just out of clarity, and it probably is just an omission, but on slide 4, bullet 3, there's no mention of the transmission infrastructure. Is the department of the view that the transmission infrastructure is not an aging infrastructure, which has challenges attached? In terms of the petrol and diesel exports, could we be told to which countries those exports were undertaken and by whom? In particular, was PetroSA involved in those exports? And were we paid for all the exports that were done? The import permits, just to clarify for me, for instance, if NGEN were to import on a regular basis a particular product, would that mean every time a shipment comes in a new permit, or are they kind of open-ended permits for a year or something like that? But you can clarify for me. The IP-safe stoves, it's all very well handing out the stoves, but is the fuel that's used in those stoves widely available, and how does it compare with the cost of illuminating paraffin? In terms of the NMPP, that's 7.5 cents per litre, which was agreed to. Has Treasury started, first of all, is that money ring-fenced? And has it started flowing to Transnet as yet? And if not, when will it? In terms of the pipeline itself, is it on schedule? When is its completion date? I see one of the pump station 6, they're only just starting the EIA on that one. I'm not sure about the other pump stations. In terms of info sessions, whilst you're reporting that some info sessions have been done, you're not saying who with, and I'm wondering what real value there is in those kind of info sessions. Surely the value would be better placed in building this kind of stuff into a school curriculum and get a much wider coverage. I'm referring to slide 19. In terms of your INEP allocations, there is an underspending, but many of this 000. Those are actually transfers. How do you monitor the actual spending of that money by the entities to which the transfers take place? Are there huge amounts of money sitting in bank accounts somewhere which haven't actually been spent, and therefore the service delivery not taking place? Because we know that's happening with municipalities and the housing department. On slide 27, you refer to the 6.8 million for Gauteng as being refurbishment, but I wasn't sure whether you were meaning that you stopped them from spending that because it was refurbishment rather than dealing with a backlog, or I actually wasn't sure what the comment really meant there. Why you referred to the refurbishment? I assume that it was because that was unauthorized. You can't spend it on refurbishment. If that was the case, how did the project ever get approved in the first place? Mr. Chairman, the interesting thing about slide 41 is the key management costs increased significantly because of the split in the one department into two. Is there any way that we can be told that what the ongoing annual additional costs will be of simply running two departments? In terms of additional electricity bills, offices, payments for ministers and deputy ministers, for DGs, DDGs, who were additional to what was in place previously, when it was just one department. I'm concerned that you're going to try and improve the financial skills at regional offices where you, by your own admission, there's a very low volume of transactions. I would have thought it would be far more efficient to then centralize your debtors in the national office rather than try and decentralize it. but that's my view, and I'd like your comment on that. Mr. Chairman, the last question, in terms of the misconduct and the action that's being taken, what was the cost to the fiscus of this misconduct, and has any of that money been recovered from the people who were involved in the misconduct? There've been two been reported to the police. One was suspended for 3 months, but nothing said about the recovery of the cost to the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Lees. Honourable Nambi.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe the unfortunate part is that we are still dealing with the annual report of minerals and energy, so some of our comments and questions might relate to other things that might have been captured if they were dealing with everything. But with that as it may, we'll try to stick to the Department of Energy. Let me join and welcome the presentation. It's clear that Chairperson, in terms of the program, we might not be even doing justice. It's very detailed, and if you want to engage, you might end up leaving some of the important things. I'd like you to simplify for me in your financial statement note 26. I find it very interesting in your presentation because you were even able to take us through the Auditor General's report, and you were able to respond almost to most of the things that were raised by the AG. That was very interesting. But at the same time, you were a little bit selective. Those that are showing the deficiencies in the department, you were not very clear in terms of elaboration. To be specific, is that the underspending of almost 123 million in Program 7. If you can take us through that one and explain what really happened on that one. And your definition of irregular expenditure, it was more of the oversimplification. I don't know, you'll assist me when responding, because we're talking about an amount that is above 4 million and how you explain it. But if you are here, somebody is supposed to process something in Joburg, and it was more of oversimplification. Maybe I got it wrong, but you'll try to deal with the specific amount that is above 4 million and explain it, and it has been even highlighted by the AG. I'd like the department to comment, because you are saying the budget cycle of the local government and the national and provincial is different. That is a fact, not even an opinion. And your word exactly, you said that's mainly that contributed to your underspending. If that is the main reason, it means as long as you have a budget cycle that is not the same as the national, you'll always have it as a department, because that's what you said. So I'd like you to deal with that one and comment, because you said that's mainly caused by the different budget cycle between the municipality and the national government, of which you know it's a fact, you're quite correct, but how can you address that? I want you to comment on that one. The other issue, it's the one of the official's concern. Honorable Liz has touched it a bit. If you can elaborate a bit how the whole thing happened so that we can be able to understand. Well, the page 151 of the report, where we're dealing with the timeliness of the reported performance information, I quote, the reliability of 40% of the targets as set out on page 17 to 124 of the annual report could not be verified since the information was not received in time for audit purposes. Comment on that one and make one to understand what was the cause. Can we really engage on page 17 to 124 even though there's a view, an opinion that has been expressed around those things? And the on the very same page 150, it's linked to my second question, where they are talking about that irregular expenditure. Try to link it with my second question and what has been written here, and your simplification when you were dealing about an official that can be here and when something has to be processed in Gauteng. The last part is the one of accruals. If you can go to page 50 and read that paragraph, and the AG is saying, if the money was paid in time, the amount in turn was going to exceed the savings in program one. And when you try to explain it, I don't think you are mindful of what has been said here. So I'd like you to comment on that one so that we can be able to understand it. Thanks for now, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Nambi. Honorable Kamere. just before Honorable Kamere, let me recognize the two members that have joined us. If they can just introduce themselves quickly.
Good morning, Chairperson. Morning, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry that I'm late. My name is John Gunda. I am a member of this committee. I'm from the North of Cape.
Good morning, everyone. Both learning going to Free State. I did tell my apologies that I'll be a bit late.
Honorable Kamere.
Thanks, Chair. The questions that I had are almost similar, mostly to Honorable Nyambi. But today, Chairperson, in order to differentiate a little bit, I'll use the pitfall approach. The issue of the AG's report and the opinion, you can try to explain it until the houses. Cattle come home, you've got a qualified opinion. Just as much as you have been getting an unqualified opinion, it has been very good. Now the approach is to this committee. This time we've got a qualified opinion. We've realized that there are gaps here and here, there and there and there. But not try to explain that, you know, this and this, and try and sit in it a little bit. No, it's not going to assist us. It's bad you got a qualified opinion, and we are not happy about that. One issue which I thought won't be in this presentation, I think we dealt it in the last financial year, was the issue of the stores. And the COO was very much then uncomfortable because she did the presentation. And we were saying to her, the issue of stoves does not impress us. And we still say so. Because if you go to our manifestos, we never tell our people that we're going to give them stoves. We're going to give them electricity. And those things are not sustainable. I've gone to seven municipalities now where these things have been dished. Now you can't find them now. The jars, the stoves, they're not there. are not sustainable. So the issue is the electrification. That's the main thing that we want to see. So I thought this won't appear in this presentation, but it did surface once more. But then at the beginning, I was a little bit puzzled because the acting CFO started the presentation with the challenges facing the department, which was a bit unusual. We start from another angle, that we might be comfortable from the start that there are challenges facing the department. It did get the breakdown of the INEP per province, what was short, so that we could locate, because that is our main area, the municipalities. You did try on the later page to say on those areas. It would have assisted us, so that when you go to our constituency offices, you say, in this province, were you able to spend 100%? We are done with these municipalities, but you cannot show them now. You know, we cannot see them that, you know, my municipality, Umlalazi or whatever, or Bulwe, you have done with the electrification. If you cannot give us today, you can give us later on. This issue of underspending and what was said by Honorable Nyambi, that the difference in the financial years does not hold water. Why would other provinces and other municipalities do good with that in place when the financial years are not the same? And then you'd have others not doing good. So it does not hold water that you can say that's the main reason. Because other municipalities are performing well, other provinces are doing with the very same different financial years. If you could explain the overexpenditure on traveling, I don't know where it starts, but if you could put some meat, you know, on that, maybe I'll have a follow-up question. And that, when I was using my arithmetic, you said there was a staff in, whether increase or decrease, it shows 103. That is 116 something and 12 something. There's that difference of 103. Why? I know this question is very sensitive, but I've got to ask it. You know, someone has got to ask it. Would you pay performance bonus for someone who got a qualified opinion? Any official, you know, say now you got now you are going to get a performance bonus. Would you do that, and what would be the justification in doing that? And if you have done so, what has been the justification, taking into account the opinion? This question of the under expenditure of plus minus 100 million, it has been dealt with in Note 26. Thanks, Chair. I'll stand there for now, but when there are responses, I do have some follow-up.
Thank you, Honourable Kamara. Honourable Faminga.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. On slide number 3, it says the department started the strategic planning in November 2008. However, if I can recall, the split only came after the elections in 2009, so I don't know if that was just a slip and if the department was doing the planning before the elections already, that we just didn't know of it. Then Honourable Lees did the pipeline to Joburg and between Joburg and Durban. Slide number 12. Referred to the inspectors for the compliance and monitoring undertook 2,309 site inspections. That's very low when it comes to 25% site inspections only. If you look at the implementation of the PAA, I don't know if you want to comment on that. And then I'd like to know in which areas the stoves were issued in the Eastern Cape, please. And then slide 15, you say the energy balance for 2006 was finalized and published on the department's website. Now, you know we're now in 2010. Is that still relevant for 2006, or was it a typo? I don't understand that. I'd actually like to see the total list of the municipal allocations, if it can be made possible, and also a list of the schools made possible. And I realize that you can't make it available here today, but I would appreciate it afterwards, please. Then, on slide number 20, an issue that was raised in slide number 27 was the delay in the municipal projects when the department's financial year starts in April and the municipal financial year ends on the 30th of June. But let me tell you that we know that provincial funding that comes through the provinces only become available year round about August, September, if you kick up a lot of things. So I'm not so sure that your money is readily available to start the project immediately. And what would your recommendation be to start the project once the money is available on the 1st of April? Because if you have a solution for that, it will be fantastic and we can really get things going. And I'm not being sarcastic. But once the money becomes available, then you've got to advertise, then you've got to go through the tender process and da-da-da-da. And so it carries on. And it's such a long thing that I would like to know how you would want to overcome that 3 months problem that we have there. Then on the next slide, you said illegal occupation of houses and no certainty as to when this will be resolved. I want to know what action is being taken there, and it's probably the municipality that must take the action and not you, but if you can give us more information on that. And then Mansopa, where there's no readily implementable project. But why then was it on your budget if there's no project? In your comments, you referred to the board of entities that you had to pay. Maybe I misheard, but it was just strange that you were going to pay for the entities' boards. It was a bit strange to me. And then the state diamond trader of 1 million rand that you bailed out, I am absolutely convinced that question came up in the budget of the Department of Minerals as well, and I can remember Honorable Sinclair referring to that. So now there's a problem because you paid them 1 million rand and so did Minerals, and I'm very concerned about that one. Can you explain what happened there, please? Then the delicious bit came. Tell us how many regional offices you have and in what state your financial order was in the regional offices for you to take the drastic action. And is this where your qualified audit came from? Then your four cases in slide 52, we all have a little bit of concern about the fact that there are only four cases of financial misconduct in the department. And I don't mean, let me put it to you. Four cases of financial misconduct, I don't understand in what department it was. Was it really financial? Was it tender? Or was it cable theft? Because you don't mention anything about cable theft, and I know that in KZN there's big cable theft, and I want to know whether this is cable theft related as well. And I think for that bit, I've now first got to be quiet for the second round. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Birmingham. DG?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will just request that the specialists that are here, I'm expecting that they've been looking at the question, or rather listening at the questions, and my expectation is that they will respond. But if I can just clarify something here, this is a document that was prepared while we're still the Department of Minerals and Energy. And that happened way before the election. Our annual report as the Department of Energy alone is due next year. So some of the issues that are being raised here is the issues which are jointly the responsibility for both departments. You will also realize that even on the issue of the qualified audit report, while those qualifications doesn't affect us as the Department of Energy, however, we are taking that responsibility to make sure that we don't have a qualified audit report as the Department of Energy. So that's basically what I would really like to comment upon. Hence, therefore, some of the issues that we have raised, we might not be able to respond to them adequately because they affect the Department of Minerals Resources. For example, on the issues of the state diamond trader, whatever they said, it's applicable to them, but it's reflected in the annual report because at the time we're both minerals and energy. So I will first request then Mr. Apana to deal with the electricity issues, and I would like to believe also we can provide some of the information that has been requested, the breakdown in municipalities and schools. So probably then if we can just take up this, please. Thank you.
Thank you. If I can start with a question about the transmission and why we do not regard it as a problem. We do. In fact, one of our programs under INEP or sub-programs is to do with what we call bulk infrastructure. Bulk infrastructure includes the substation and what we call the sub-transmission lines. But we draw a demarcation line between what we call social infrastructure and what ESCOM does as part of their normal program to roll out commercial infrastructure. So the electrification program does deal with sub-transmission infrastructure, and we do that as part of the bulk program. Just to complete the picture, we do bulk infrastructure, we do the connections themselves, and this financial year we also have what we call the rehabilitation program as well. And I think this addresses the question that was asked about a particular reference, the question about the Nogain Ezadaimani underspending and how the project got approved in the first place if it was not backlogged. At that point, or rather in this particular financial year under review today, rehabilitation of infrastructure was not part of the electrification program. One of the obvious challenges that we face is the fact that whilst we are busy connecting as many new households to the grid as possible, we still have, at this point, perhaps 3 million additional houses that do not have access to electricity. So So the challenge for us is where do you apply the resources, the limited resources that we have? Do you fix the infrastructure that is already in place, or do you connect those that have never had access to the grid? And so in the Lukeng Tanzamani instance, we had specifically indicated that the project needs to connect new infrastructure, yet they had diverted the money to try and do rehabilitation without permission, and that is how we intervened on the basis that the project was not met, was not being executed for what it was originally intended for. The question around how we monitor the actual INEP spending beyond just transferring the money, there are a number of mechanisms in place in order to ensure that there is actual outputs on the ground. Firstly, we have regional offices with regional energization managers. Over and above that, we have technical audit teams who do sample audits of the projects that are being undertaken by the municipalities. And we have certain norms. For an example, in respect of electrification projects, the regional energization manager in the respective district or provinces are required to visit a project at least once in its life cycle. So we know that there is delivery on the ground and they report like that. But over and above that, there is also a requirement in terms of which we track the number of meters. The meters have a unique number. So we're able to know that that particular meter has been connected onto the grid and the meter is dispensing electricity. So it's a way in which we can link the actual funding that was transferred to delivery on the ground. The question about the budget mismatch between municipalities and national is an interesting one, and I appreciate the concern that we seem to be coming every year with the same complaint. In fact, our own director general has said that she doesn't want to see that in our excuses anymore. And it is a very simple matter that municipalities have a cash flow problem. If we take a step back, the division of revenue was meant to provide certainty over a 3-year MTF cycle. Right? So the idea is that you have certainty about the funding that is coming your way, and as such, it shouldn't really matter that there is, you know, a particular point in time when the money from the fiscal system has not been transferred to you. That's in the theory. Unfortunately, because the municipality does not have any cash flow, the municipality, or some municipalities don't have any cash flow, they wait until, firstly, the budget is confirmed from 1st of April. Then they go through their own budget process, and as you might well be aware, nothing much happens until 1st of July of the particular year in terms of approving municipal budgets. And over and above that, the municipalities would go through the procurement process in relation to those confirmed allocations that have been made. It is an annual problem, if I can put it that way, to the extent that this year, in other words, the 2010-11 financial year, National Treasury, pursuant to austerity measures, issued a directive in terms of which we were not allowed to transfer any funding to municipalities before July of the financial year. And this was a cash flow management intervention by National Treasury, because the reality is simply that the municipalities do not spend until after that time. But having given that background, we're not trying to excuse the fact that they still have an additional 3 months after April in terms of which to spend and to report. So what happens then is that we have been reporting on the basis of our own cycle. In other words, where at the end of March of each financial year, the municipality would still be busy with that financial year's program, and therefore it represents an understanding on their part. now have a situation where, through indication of the progress through of the previous financial year, we're able to get a full municipal cycle to match the financial year of the year, if that makes sense. So basically what happens is that the mismatch, we give them an allowance of 3 months in order to compensate for the 3 months that they would have lost in that, and you will not see this kind of, if you like, the excuse that I made reference to earlier on about the mismatch in the financial year. It's interesting that the parallel with provinces is affected by the fact that provinces enjoy a much stronger cash flow than municipalities, so they're able to, you know, to ride the wave much better than municipalities. We see this trend more and more in the smaller municipalities than in the bigger ones, but we do have a way in which we can try and report in a manner that gives a better picture than just referring to the mismatch in the financial year. In terms of the proposed solutions, as requested by the Honourable Member, we have made representation to the FFC, to the Fiscal and Finance Commission, around how that can be improved, in terms of which, as an example, municipalities would be required to submit plans, particularly in relation to housing, because by and large, this is largely driven by the electricity serves the housing program by and large in the urban areas. It's only in the rural areas and in the informal areas in urban areas that we find that electrification is of existing houses. So there are some specific proposals that we have made to the Fiscal Commission in that regard. We do have a disaggregation of the municipal allocations in the actual annual report, and we apologize for not flashing it on the screen today, but you can see, you know, at the level of provinces, district, and even local government, what the allocations were and so forth. And it is on page 196, page 196 of the actual annual report. Perhaps the last point is around the planning cycle, that in response to the question about why an INEP allocation was made, for example, to Mansupa municipality if there was no housing project in the first place. And that is the point that I was alluding to earlier on, that in order to ensure that we integrate our approaches, we have to keep tab on the housing projects that municipalities intend to undertake. And incidentally, this is part of an integrated approach with the Department of Human Settlements as well. Because we make allocations on the strength of the municipal representation. So if the municipality indicates that they're going to be building houses in a particular area, the questionnaire around funding that gets issued to them requires that the municipal manager must sign off as to the verification of the houses that are going to be built, etc. But unfortunately, there are problems on that side as well, and Mansupa is one of those where the housing just did not materialize and we had made an allocation. Fortunately, the Division of Revenue makes provision for us to divert the funds to within the district, firstly, and then to the province and so on. But unfortunately, in this particular instance, there had been problems diverting the money away from this particular municipality. There is an initiative underway in terms of which some municipalities have been given the power of providing the function of housing has been devolved to such a level. I don't know, I'm not sure if it's at the municipal or at the metro or at the provincial level, but to such an extent that we're able to have access to those housing plans. And part of the solution is to do the joint planning. We find that this works very effectively in what is called the Breaking New Ground program by the Department of Human Settlement, where we're able to integrate the electrification program into an existing housing project rather than us reacting to houses or applications that are issued by municipalities without necessarily knowing whether the houses are going to be built or not. And incidentally, even the other side of the coin is a problem where sometimes municipalities build houses and the houses then take a long time before electrification is in place. So it's a problem that we are faced with all the time. But I think it's mainly through an integrated approach with the Department of Housing and with the municipalities and the track record of those municipalities in terms of their planning capacity to do that. We send the regional managers to these projects as well in the allocations process. And one of the issues that they always check for is whether there are any houses being built so that we can align the housing or other electrification program to the housing. I think that covers all questions. I did answer that yesterday with the transmission.
Thank you very much, DG, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm going to try and answer the questions in the sequence that they came in. Some are linked, so I will link those ones. But before I could just indicate that in terms of challenges, on the liquid fuel side, there are just two or three that I'd like to bring to the attention of the committee before answering. The one is that I think in terms of security of crude oil supply for the country, our view is that we need to accelerate that. And what that means is basically a lot of economic diplomacy and a lot of shuttling back and forth between the country and the various capitals where crude oil is found. Because in the medium to long term, if we don't do that, we will find actually that we no longer have allocations that we can call our own. And that you would find that China, for example, has taken all the crude oil there is to get in the African continent. The second one is the issue of attracting investment into the downstream sector, meaning the refining as well as the downstream infrastructure side. That is because the big multinationals, the Shells and EP and so on, are fast losing interest in that sector globally. They are selling all their downstream assets. So that's a challenge that we have to face. And then, of course, the third one relates to the licensing, making sure that we ensure that whoever comes in, there is an orderly process of doing that. But just to answer the questions, the on the exports, firstly, the countries that were exported to were basically what we call the BLNS countries, Botswana, Swaziland, Lesotho, Namibia, the DRC, Zambia, in addition to those, Zimbabwe, as well as Kenya and last year Malawi as well. Petro SA did export, and the exports from Petro SA went to to the United States of America diesel, as well as there was diesel that went to East Africa, to Kenya. PetroSA is not a major player in the export market because, of course, of its size. Most of its production basically comes to the Western Cape, and some of it to the Eastern Cape, and is mainly taken by the big oil majors. I think in terms of the time it takes to get an export permit, I can vouch that it is a 24-hour turnaround process to get an export permit, because as well as an import permit, because you only can import and export when you have a license. So you already are in the database. So we're not dealing with somebody that we don't know. And we have a system where basically we make a recommendation, and then that recommendation still has got to be ratified by the Department of Trade and Industry. Why we do this is not really to introduce a bureaucratic step in the process, but it's just that we want to make sure that we don't export when we have shortages in the country. That really is the reason why we control that process. So, for example, for an engine, the permit would be valid for 6 months. So they don't have to come to us each time there is an import or an export to be made. We're looking continuously at that. Particularly now that we are importing about 2.8 billion liters of petrol and diesel. The question then is, to what extent do we still continue, exporting if we are going, do we have enough in our country before we allow the exports? And we are continuously looking at whether the 6 months is a sufficient guarantee that we won't run out in the country. But for now, the system is working well. There is sufficient, capacity to import and then export as well to our neighboring countries, because they depend on us for fuel. And also it is important for the South African based companies to be able to supply those markets, because for them as well it's a security of demand, and it makes sure that they remain viable. If we were to stop exporting, then we lose that business to a reliance, for example, of India and some other companies. So we always try and make sure that we can assist the players in the country to hold on to those markets. The paraffin stove, I think we just need to clarify that it's the stove that is safe. It's not a safe paraffin. So the safety is in the actual appliance, not the illuminating paraffin itself. So the stove has got safe features, and unfortunately those stoves are imported, and we basically felt that there is a need for us to intervene because paraffin is used by a lot of people. There are a number of fires that come in as a result of paraffin, and as a result we feel the program has got to continue until such time as everyone has got access to electricity. What we are also investigating now is the use of liquefied petroleum gas as a next level, development or access to modern for people to try and reduce the risks that come in as a result of the use of paraffin. And of course, in the where were these stoves distributed in the Eastern Cape? It was Bizana, in Bizana municipality. The issue of the pipeline, the NMPP, the monies that have been allocated are ring fenced. There is an allocation of 1.5 billion per annum, and it is ring fenced. It's given to Transnet in tranches, or quarterly tranche, four tranches per annum. And there are conditions also that, other than ring fencing, Transnet should investigate the, you know, the possibility of actually corporatizing a Transnet pipeline, so that you really ensure that all the activities of Transnet pipeline as a whole are ring fenced. So that investigation is underway. Are there delays in the pipeline? Is it on schedule? I think this is one area where, as a department, we have major concerns. There are delays in the construction of the pipeline, mainly because there were routes that had to be changed by Transnet, and some of the environmental impact assessments issues were not resolved timeously. There were appeals, some of which have since been resolved. But in our view, the delay is a major, major concern. We are dealing with that matter in discussions with Transnet, but it doesn't look at this point that we will be able to complete that pipeline at the end of 2011, as was expected. What does that mean for the 1.5 billion? I think that one we've made clear to Transnet, and in fact the Minister of Finance as well, that the amount that they were given was for 3 years, and it was a fixed amount. And it is not going to be, there is no chance of an additional allocation, because it was really an allocation to deal with the security of supply component of that pipeline. So if that was not linked to delays at all. On the information sessions, quite clearly we are always looking for ways of improving these information sessions. But the way we've structured them is we do target schools, but what we try and do to try and save costs as well is to link up with the fire services departments of the municipalities, so that when they go to the communities, then we basically go in with them as part of a combined effort to try and prevent fires. Mainly the target is really fires in informal settlements. That's where most of the information sessions focus. The inspections, I think perhaps the number of, we should have explained the number of license applications that we received. They are also the number of 15,000 that is reflected there also reflects the challenges that are there in the sector, because we don't have 15,000 service stations in the country. We have about 4,700. However, the service stations, they change hands. The ownership changes hands sometimes. People stay in them for 3 months and realize that it's not working out, and then they change. And we are always, when people come and apply, encouraging, trying to indicate to people that, you know, you shouldn't really be putting your pensions in retail until you are sure that, you know, you can actually sustain the business. But of course, people then, you know, also are choosers of trying to basically stop their business opportunity. Some we do refuse because where there's clearly they're going to compete for literate with existing players, we simply cannot allow that, because we then introduce disorder in the whole market. So in terms of the site inspection, actually that number we believe is a lot. We now we are trying to reduce that number, but increase the quality and the visibility of the inspection. We feel that we just need to maybe go to a site once, especially the compliance sites. We need to go to them perhaps once every 2 years, and because a site in a major location, they are not going to display a fuel price. That's going to mislead the public, because there people actually monitor the petrol price on a regular basis. Because when you go to these sites, that's one of the first things you check. Are they charging people what is you know, the price that has been promulgated for that month? But we have picked up certain trends in certain provinces where people take advantage of the distances from the regional headquarters of the department, and you find a situation where they actually add 1 or 2 cents to the price. But those ones, I think they now know that we come unannounced, and we focus on those areas. So the number is actually quite... It basically means that we visit a site once every, once. In fact, some sites we used to go twice a year, some even 3 times or 4 times a year, and we believe that that is a bit too much. On the energy balances, I must admit there that we are behind in terms of publishing that information, but it's also due to the fact that it is difficult to it is quite a process to actually get all this information from the major players, the users of energy in the country. And we have now got a full complement, staff complement in that unit, and we believe that we will be able to, you know, to catch up in terms of publishing those energy balances. But also we need to be careful with the energy balances, because we should not be seen to be publishing information that is seen to be collusive or aiding collusion in the market, because these are some of the we publish in those balances volumes as well, and through that people are able to discern, you know, market shares and things like that, and so those are some of the challenges. But we believe that with the staff complement that we have now, we'll be able to do this. I must just say that the digest, the price report, which we will undertake to table to the committee, as well as the energy balances, were done by the staff of the department in-house, and that's something we're proud of, and that capacity now resides in the department. We're able to, you know, give a breakdown of energy prices in the country up to an each energy resource, energy source, and price per energy carrier. So it's something that we are proud of. Quite clearly, the delay is unacceptable, and we accept that. I'm not sure if I think I've covered. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, I think in line with what my colleagues have been doing, I'll try to answer the questions in the order in which they were raised, but of course some of them are interlinked. So if maybe I haven't covered a particular aspect of the question, the honorable members will then remind me to do so. But I think the issue of the multi-product pipeline, Mr. Matkubela has addressed it, but maybe one issue critical to mention there is that half of that amount have already been paid over to Transnet today in the current financial year, half of the 1.5 billion. The issue of actual transfers and actual use of the money of the municipalities, Mr. Apane did answer that. But again, Chairperson and honorable members, if you go to our Annexure 1A on page 106, we then report per municipality, how much was it allocated, how much did we transfer to them, how much did they use by the end of March. So, however, you take note of the fact that by the time we are closing, 196, sorry, I've just been corrected, not 106, 196, page 196. So you'll remember that by the time we are closing, of course, we still have got 3 months of implementing their processes, but we'll report what is then used at the end of March. Chairperson, there was an issue that was raised around the whether can we quantify what are the costs of now having two departments going into the future in terms of the increase in the staff costs and all those other related costs. I must really say that at our disposal for now, I cannot really be able to really say the actual cost, but of course on our books they were accounted for differently as separate units. So such expenditures can be able to be quantified and be illustrated as to say the DMR part of ministry for 2009 and 10 financial year spent this much, the DOE part of it spent this much, the DG part of DMR spent this much, and the DG part of DOE spent that much. We are able to give that particular information if required. The issue of the centralization of data, Chairperson, versus the decentralization, I think the honorable member is very correct. We have set up our the departments are set up in line with your thinking, but they are such basic functions at the regional level. There is not an intensive work of finance, particularly on the energy side versus the DMR side. On the energy side, particularly what they do at the regional side is more around petty cashes and just basic reconciliation of their application fees versus what the applications they receive, because we have automated the payment process. So what they do is just download their bank statement, look at what are the incoming applications on their register, then they so that they ensure that all the applicants have paid their money because it's done online. So as a result, we don't have fully functional structure of finance at regional offices. The master data system is centralized at the head office, and as a result, we deal with those exceptions that the regions themselves couldn't resolve for one reason or the other. But having said that, Chairperson, it's critical still that we equip them or train them to be able to execute those minimum functions that we expect or that we have assigned to them, because usually they will be the technical experts on their field in someone on regulation on mine health and safety. He is a technician on mine health and safety issues. So you might find that he don't have the basic knowledge of finance. So hence we have talked about improving their skills on that front. There was a question that was raised around the issue of the misconduct and the recovery of the money there too. The four cases that we are reporting to, the two cases didn't have an actual cost implication on the financial on the financials of the department, but they had something to do with the influence that one has had as within the employ of the state, and therefore go outside and have influence. And as a result, lesson one that was picked up, that was then dealt with. But the other, Chairperson, the issues around the people who falsified claims, those were recovered. And there was an issue of someone that was on leave, unauthorized, that was disciplined. And then the money of that of those leave days was recovered as well. There was a question around the note 26 of our financial statement. I'll firstly maybe link it to your question that was dealing with accrual on page 150 of the financials, wherein the auditor general is saying on accruals we would have exceeded our budget should the payments have been made within 30 days. This is the process. In terms of our accounting process, you only recognize a transaction once you pay a rent and a cent. In terms of accrual basis of accounting, you recognize a rent and cent when you commit. It means the day you sign a contract, the day you have a contractual agreement with the second party, you recognize that. It's your commitment already. Now, what we are trying to operate on is something in the middle. That is called modified cash basis of accounting, which means you will recognize what you have paid for. Whatever that you have committed and have not paid, you will then disclose it. It won't appear on your annual financial statement, but you will put it as a disclosure note on your financial statement and say to the users, this is one of the contracts that I've entered into. It is worth this much. Now, as a financial manager, at somewhere towards the end of the year, I balance these things. Let me give you a practical example. I order a consignment of computers, maybe to the value of 2 million, in January. Come Feb, the service provider say to me, I won't be able to meet your expected delivery of these computers, which is maybe within 2 months. I won't be able to deliver by March. As a result, expect my delivery in May. Which means his invoice will come with what? Which is delivered. I'll only be able to pay him in May. So what do I do? I'll then say, then do I just keep this money sitting here, the 2 million committed on computers that won't come and I won't pay them in this financial year, while I'll pay them in the next financial year? Because remember, by 31st of March, Treasury will take all that which I didn't use. So then I have to make a decision that says, okay, well, because now I'm sure that you are not going to be able to deliver these things at this point in time, then I can commit the 2 million to something else for this current financial year, because I'm going to have to pay you on the next financial year. But if I was on a accrual system of accounting, I would be living a different scenario, because I will recognize this transaction when I do it, and by the time of my year end, Treasury will then recognize, or the system itself will recognize the money not as unspent. Even though delivery is not yet here, it will recognize it as an expense already, because I've already committed that money. So that is how we manage it, because either way, if you don't use it, you forfeit it, but you have a commitment sitting elsewhere. And then if you use it, if you are on accrual, then you will have overexpended. But you see, the challenge is trying to work on the middle. If we were in either side, then this will have a complete guidance of how do we then deal with that.
have asked me again to explain Note 26, which is about the receivables of the departmental revenue. That is an amount that is sitting at 25 million there, and then it's written as interest, rent on interest, dividends, and rent on land. Now, what happens there is that when someone has a license, it's particularly again related to Department of Mineral Resources. When someone has a license to do prospecting, there is a minimum royalty that this particular person must pay to the department, and the file will be saying that. But you must, there might be another clause that says you even pay the minimum royalty, and you pay the other amount based on the production you've done. The production part cannot be confirmed by the time I'm reporting, but the minimum part can be confirmed, and as a result, this amount will always be an estimate. Hence, we have even indicated ourselves, we have qualified the amount ourselves and say on page 189 that the amount, the receivable amount disclosed is based on the prospecting fees outstanding and minimum royalties collectible in terms of the contract. The amount might change on receipt of declarations from the debtor and adjustment of applicable interest. So as a result, this amount will never be an exact amount. It will always be an estimate. But what the Auditor General is fighting for is that have a fully-fledged financial system to administer this process. Because your process of a manual register and reconciling with spreadsheets have got a lot of risks linked to it. And as a result, that's where Honorable Gamede, as I was talking to the, I was not trying to simplify or trying to undermine the what you call, but the qualification. But I was indicating that the only solution now that will get us in terms with the Auditor General is having a fully fledged system. Then, when you go now to the fully fledged system, you have got a restriction from the National Treasury that was issued in 2004 that no department is allowed to procure a financial system without authority of the Treasury, because they are developing a system that is called IFMS, Integrated Financial Management System. That system has been on the pipeline for as long as I've been working for government. And on the other side, I understand now it is being piloted at some provinces and regions, which is fine, but in the meantime, I must report. And I am on cash basis of accounting. I've got a vast system that is built to administer cash basis. But now I'm required to report additionally on accrual basis of accounting, for which the system of that is not provided, and I cannot even procure it. If I had procured that, I'll be sitting here telling you that I have got a regular expenditure again, because I have procured and I'm not allowed to do so in terms of the Treasury instruction. Then there is another issue that you raised, Honorable Member, around the 123 million of under expenditure that was not clearly explained. But this is a combination. You remember I've mentioned the under expenditure of on INEP, which we've been talking about around municipalities. We have talked about the under expenditure on the non-grid. So this 123 million is a combination of those two projects that we could not be able to spend all the money on during the financial years. Now, there was an issue again around the over expenditure on irregular expenditure of around about 4 million, that which we are simplifying. But this is how the process works. The DG would have been, in terms of the Act would be saying that DG, no one can incur an expenditure in terms of Section 38 without approval by the accounting officer, who is the DG sitting here. Now, the DG will go in his department and do the delegation of authorities, and he says, 5,000 rand, I'm giving an authority every director to sign for that.
30,000 rands, I'm establishing a committee that would look at these things and then approve. Over a million, I'm saying that the committee will look at that, but I want to approve it myself personally. So these cases are particularly revolving around our new 3.6 million of that is around the construction of our new building there, wherein you have got a contractor that you have appointed, but there is a scope of what he must do. Particularly, it relates around the designs of the building. You remember that while we were in the course of constructing, the split announcement came. And then when the split announcement came, we realized that now there must be two offices of the minister in this building. And we have planned, the plan, the architectural design and the plan says one minister. You remember that they don't have same amenities. Their amenities are prescribed in terms of the public works rules. Now, as and when these builders are busy constructing this thing, they realize that if we run a pipe in terms of the actual, a plumbing pipe in terms of the initial plan, this thing won't be possible. Now they will, of course, call the department and say, you can do this and this and that. But this process that might be followed might be that the DG must approve or something like that. And then someone maybe makes a call to say, look, this is the situation, explain it, maybe send an email or everything, and the DGs give a go ahead and say, okay, it's fine, you can go ahead and do it. And then it means afterwards, the full documentation of that will then be sent to the DG, who will then approve and condone that particular expense. So it's not an expense that was done out of the scope of the organization or not authorized. It is authorized, but there is the actual process that she set, a director could assign to commit with the service provider. But the rules say, after consultation with her, but the rules say it's her that must sign. So that is how this thing was incurred. There is an issue again on Honorable Kamede, what you were raising in terms of explanation of this qualification does not help. And I truly agree with you that a qualification will always be bad. It is actually an embarrassment to each and every CFO. It's a serious, serious embarrassment, I'm sure, to the DG as well. But until we understand the context on which this qualification is in, then it will almost be impossible for you to solve this particular problem. Hence, you have seen that on the intervention side, we have talked about, of course, beefing up our financial skills at the region, the minimum, and then at least be able to see if we cannot do a simple database, but not buy a system. Because if I buy a system, full system, I will be in contravention with the treasury instruction. So we are just looking at a situation, that is at the GMR side. They're looking at a situation wherein they develop an internal database through their internal people that maybe they can be able to build some internal controls around and then be able to have a satisfactory basis to say that at least things are running smoothly, there are controls and there are checks and balances built into the system. I think the payment of performance bonuses, my colleagues, Mr. Ngune, will add, but the question was around whether can one pay performance bonus when there's a qualification, when there was an audit qualification. But the only two things that I wanted to raise, and then Mr. Ngune will carry on from that, is that honorable member, the bonus for SMS, for senior management services and above, is paid after the audit report. The bonuses for level 1 to level 12, which is junior staff until the the entrance level of managers, is paid before the audit report in terms of the DPSA guidelines and all those things. So the performance bonus that you see having paid on our current financial year, it means on the SMSC side is for that other financial year. But I think the nitty-gritty, the nuts and bolts of that, my colleague is the most competent authority to do that. Let me finalize maybe on the municipality transfers from August. I think Mr. Pane has already dealt with that. satisfactorily. But what we need to again take into consideration on the, on that matter is the fact that you will see over the years that we had maintained our expenditure well below 1.9%, 0.9%, and all those things. But the financial crisis didn't assist at all. Mr. Pane was alluding to the controls that Treasury has put in place now that says that you cannot transfer this money before this period, because in any way, our assessment says the municipality won't use it. And as a result, in that case, really, there is not really much that we can do for now. But is there something that we are then able to do? It's true, we have got our planning process, because we take municipalities through this planning process wherein we deal with this their project plans and all those things. Our plans must be aligned to the reality that we are facing. You cannot then accept a plan that tells you that by April and May and June I'll be connecting 1-3, while you know very well.
So the plan must talk.
Okay.
Just to say, speed up, please.
Okay. So that is the situation in terms of the municipality. Our planning must talk to the reality. And again, the issue around the financial misconduct, I think I've covered. I think that's all that I have. All the other questions next are linked to what I've already answered. Thank you.
Okay. Just before the next person answers, honourable member.
Oh, sorry, I thought they are done. I thought it's second round.
I just want to pose a question to the DG. We're sitting with a dilemma. When we draw up our program, it was on the parliamentary program. There was no setting for today. It was totally blank, and that's why we said that we'll carry on till about 5 o'clock. But last week, the programming committee has decided that there should be a setting today, last week and Wednesday. So then we had to juggle the program around. So and in terms of the program, we also sit with the IAEA. I believe from the ministerial side that if possible the statute need to be passed before Parliament rises. So we're sitting with that dilemma. So we want to ask the department if we can finish the annual report up until 1, and then we'll write to the powers that be. Next week we will be in the Free State. So the department has got money. I see there's got a lot of money for traveling. So they can come down to the Free State and we do the IAEA. And when we come back from the Free State, the House will be sitting and we can ratify the IAEA in the House. DG, if that is fine with you. Is that okay with you? Okay.
That's okay. But depending, of course, what date it might, I might not necessarily be available, but I'll have senior management available.
Okay. Well, we will set it for the date that the minister is also there, because I need them. I think the minister are also part, or the deputy minister are part of the panel. So we'll set it for the day that they are there to come and also greet the committee and that the areas. Honorable Ngambi, we'll go to the second round now. Let Mr. Mguni.
Yeah, he has to answer the question so that he can get it.
Oh, you can't?
No,
not
because I
really didn't get it. Oh. I see he's whispering next to the lady next to him. Maybe she got some performance bonuses. Mr. Mguni.
Yeah, maybe Chairperson, is because I am confident to recommend the baby page. No, Chairperson, maybe just to correct. Yeah. This suspicion that maybe cash bonuses have been paid to the senior management, to the employees or senior management service for the financial year 2009-2010. No cash bonus has been paid for 2009-2010 financial year, both on the DMR side and as well as on the DOE side. introductory remarks, there was an indication that some of the activities that were supposed to be carried out had to be deferred, amongst others, the performance assessment of, you know, of the senior management service, because really capacity was very limited. Remember, support services was servicing two departments immediately after the announcement of the split by the state president. And we embarked on a transitional phase from October to 31st March. From the 1st of October 2009 to 31st March 2010. So we really did not have time to give attention to it. But in as far as the staff increase is concerned, yes, there was a staff increase. Amongst others, as a result of the split, remember, we had to have now two ministries, two DGs, and some of the pieces of legislation had to be implemented, like Mr. Machuvela was indicating, the Petroleum Products Amendment Act. The majority of employees that were, you know, assisting with licensing, following the decision by Cabinet Lekgotla that surely there is capacity shortages, you know, in as far as licensing processes are concerned, both on the mineral licensing side as well as on the petroleum licensing side. We've always been struggling, really, with capacity. Hence, Mr. Matuela was saying, with the capacity that we have, we hope that, you know, we will cope. We also had to implement the vetting strategy, as we had inherited it from the National Intelligence Agency. We had to also ensure the repositioning of the HR function as well as the implementation of the employee wellness framework. So, and I must say, we are still seriously understaffed. Currently, a number of positions in as far as energy is concerned are unfunded, and people are overloaded and losing very competent employees because of the workload and high stress levels amongst others. In relation to the misconduct cases, yes, there was a manipulation of processes, you know, to advance, you know, self-interest, and we viewed that as a fraudulent activity because if I act in my capacity as an employee of government, I influence processes, whether they benefit me or not, it's for the police to prove. Hence, we are saying that, you know, both cases have been reported to the police. And, you know, the two employees have also turned out, submitted appeals. So, and relating to the fraudulent claim, you know, it's a small amount of 800 rands, and it was recovered. An unauthorized leave of absence with the subsequent amendment of a medical certificate, I think that person was really dealt with accordingly. You know, it was a suspension of pay for 3 months with a final written warning. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I see Honorable Gamede is ready. Honorable Nyambi is ready. Honorable Sinclair is ready. Honorable Lynch is ready. Okay, let's follow in that order. Honorable Gamede.
No, thanks, Chair. I won't ask any questions because I didn't report that I also have to meet my ministry at one. But I accept the response from Mr. Mgoni that those bonuses were late bonuses, and hoping that there won't be any other late bonuses paid in this financial year. And two, that I'm eagerly looking forward to 2010-2011 annual reports. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Rambi.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe a little bit of advice that can assist all of us in future. From the department and You know, with us in the NCOP, you have people that are serving various committees, as the chairperson alluded to that when you started. So you'll have a department that will come and they will tell you good stories about the AG if everything is positive. But if you have got a negative finding, then it's a problem. You try to justify everything. There's no way where you'll accept and come with a way where we'll deal with it. To be precise, the very same AG in 151 is clear that in almost all your payments, you have exceeded the 30 days. The AG finding, it's not me who's saying it, it's here in 151. And how do you link that to what you have said when you were dealing with that question, that is dealing with that amount that was going to make you to exceed? And number two is saying you deviated from the tender process for procurement in excess of 1 million. And there's no way where you acknowledge it and indicate that how we are going to deal with that. Well, you deliberately decided to leave that one off page 17 to page 124 as I raised it. I'm looking forward to the report of 2010-2011. Why? Very interesting. You know, I've gone through this report and I've realized that you were clear to indicate that no material, no 2010 ticket were bought. Maybe it's because my understanding is that this report is up to March 2010, right? The World Cup was in June, August, June, July, right? So why you decided to have it here? It's in 143, so that you can check. If you can go to 143, it's very clear. It's even in bold. Any other material? Soccer World Cup clothing and tickets. The department did not purchase any clothing and tickets for the 2010 Soccer World Cup. Very interesting. But DG and your delegation, some of you have been in this almost 17 years of democracy. Some of you have been to this parliament more than 100 times making presentations, so you understand the procedure that is happening here. The other side of the story is also true. Some of the members that are here, they've been here in parliament since 1994. So the trick that you have that you think if you are going to... is the very same trick that they understand, that if you are a department, you are getting a qualified opinion on how you are going to respond. So you must be careful if they are coming here. That is why Mungundi is correct every time that if you are here, except where you have some limitations, with the purpose of us assisting each other that we deal with those challenges that are on the ground, and when you come back, you are better than today. And every time when there's a negative finding, it's like there's a problem how the DG is interpreting some of these things. The fortunate part is that I imagine if it was a situation of us getting the report, reading, coming to you. But we are so fortunate because as public representatives, we have that opportunity to interact with the DG. And he will give us the template, and we'll engage. And we'll know what is the procedure. And when meeting you, it's strange because if there's a negative finding, you'll try to interpret the finding. And in most instances, you'll try to justify. But be that as it may, Chairperson, it's only one part after my comment. It's that one of a level of people that have resigned. I've seen in your report you have indicated in some other instances due to health, ill health, what, but you have more than 50% of those that just resign. If you can try to clarify maybe the reason behind that. I think the number is almost 50 something, so it's more than 50% people that left the department. Otherwise, it's a very interesting exercise, but in future, make sure that if you come,
are ready to engage and they know your tricks and yeah, that's it. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Member. Honorable Sinclair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to ask too many questions because if you ask too many questions, you become a deputy minister. So.
Is there a request that you are sending out to the majority party? Or
No. I see there's a number of them. Just three short issues. The first one is, I hear the CFO is acting. Why acting, DG? The second issue is the one about the security of crude oil. Is one of the colleagues the other day raised a question in the NCOP regarding exploration on the West Coast. Is there currently some exploration going on, trying to assist South Africa and making sure that that we have enough oil? And then the third issue is my old story. This exercise is only 50% successful because we only engage the officials. There's many policy issues that we need to engage the ministers on. I don't want to see the ministers only on the photos. I want to see them in the comments. So I want to request that the minister, and apparently there's now a deputy minister also, must come to the committee meetings too. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Lees, DG, you take note of the request.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I got an explanation about the $1.5 billion, and that was great. But does the $1.5 billion, it doesn't cover the 7.5 cents a litre that is now going to be added to the fuel cost to subsidize the construction? Or is that the same thing? Am I getting confused here? If I could just get some clarity on that, please.
Thank you so much, Chair. The issues I will consider Mr. Gamede and Senyambi as comments, and which I believe it's constructive engagement, so we'll accept that. On the issue of the acting CFO, the CFO, our CFO is at a deputy director general level. And we need to get cabinet approval for that. So we have received the cabinet approval, and she has accepted the Ms. Chetty. She has accepted the offer, and she's starting on that.
On
the 6th of December. So that's basically it. On the issue of of course, I'll raise the issue with the minister and the deputy minister, and if Mr. Makubela can handle the issues that were raised on the hydrocarbons.
Thank you very much, DP. Chairperson, honourable members, on the issue of the exploration efforts on our shores, there's been a lot of interest lately in, applying for blocks, and the Petroleum Agency has awarded licenses. But we, from the department side, we believe that the people who've been granted exploration rights, I think, need to be nudged into more action. Because I think their studies are taking a bit longer. But of course, we would say that from the Department of Energy side, because we want to get certainty as to what is there. But all indications are that, the hydrocarbon potential is limited, and that there is still going to be a need for us to look into the rest of the world, and this is quite an important activity in our view, because other countries are doing it. They are doing it via private sector players in their countries, but I mean the Chinese are doing it using lots of dollars and grabbing a lot of acreage in the continent. It's not an inexpensive exercise. Some of the blocks, just to bid for them, you have to pay bonuses of up to $200 million. And that gives you no guarantee. And you know, they one block, for example, in Angola is $1 billion. But you, for that, you only get about 16% participation in the block. So, but it's something that has got to be done in our view. The 7.5 cents is already included in the price, and that will remain for 3 years, and that translates to 4.5 billion rand, and that then has been split into 3 years, and for each year it's 1.5 cents. I mean 1.5 billion rand. So. Thank you.
All right. I think all questions have been answered. If there's any unanswered questions, can it be sent in writing to the secretary? Please, otherwise we will have no members left in the meeting if we prolong any further. Honourable Sinclair?
Okay, I just want to repeat my request that the department brief us on the solar park in the near future. I've raised it the previous time, but I think given the possibilities and the possible capital expenditure, necessary that this committee must engage in that process. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. In actual fact, we have just asked the researcher to do some research for us in terms of the solar, in terms of electricity, so that we can undertake an oversight visit when we come back in the next quarter. But we still got placement. That's on our hands that we need to finish and settle. So with that, I hope, DG, that in our brief that we're going to request a meeting while we're in Free State, we're also going to ask maybe the nuclear energy to come and just brief us on placement. And before we go there and we walk into a lot of unsatisfied people, and we haven't got the answers. People has got all the answers, because I know that NERSA has been to Koha Municipality. I would also like to be on board on developments. And there's still an outstanding visit to KZN as well that we need to fulfill with the Honourable of these members. DG, parting shot from your side?
No, thank you very much. Chair, we're always at your disposal whenever.
Well, thank you, DG. Honourable members, I hope you have not got anything burning. If you do, can you just dose it for till next week, for a while till next week, and then we can start the fires again. But with that, this meeting stands adjourned, and see you at 2 o'clock in the house. DG and your team, thank you very much, and all the best for the future. We hope to see you at, where are we going? Putetsaba, right? Kwakwa. Putetsaba. We're going to Putetsaba, so you might just go with us on an oversight to see if there's electrification in it. So all the best. Thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned. Putetsaba.
So we'll have the IAEA and the solar.
Yeah.
Briefing on the solar park and the solar water.
And the roller.
The roller. Yeah.
And the IAEA.
No, but that was yes, we were not yet.
No, don't we hear?
So that's too much.
When it was, I think I'm going to go stop. And I don't think it was.
Oh!
Okay, but there's a solar park that they're focusing on.
Solar park?
Yeah.
And then this one I'll take you with.
Now you can add it.
I'll let you know about that. Of course, tomorrow we do. Okay, I'll tell you.
Okay.
Tomorrow, yeah.
I think it's Jamula. I don't know. We need to swap.
Oh, yeah.